James Watson and Francis Crick saw the picture, their jaws dropped. They used Photograph 51 as the basis of their 3D model of DNA, which eventually won them a Nobel Prize in physiology or medicine. Rosalind left King's College London to work in other areas. She made crucial discoveries about how viruses spread infection. For this, and for her vital contribution to the discovery of DNA, she is now acknowledged as one of the most important scientists of the 20th century.
Ruby Nell Bridges, activist. Don't follow the path. Go where there is no path and begin the trail. Born September 8, 1954, United States of America. Once upon a time in New Orleans, there lived an incredibly brave girl called Ruby. She had to walk miles to get to her school, even though there was one closer to her home, but that school was all white and Ruby was black. "You can't stop my child from going to a school because of the color of her skin," said Ruby's mom. "It's wrong, and it's against the law." Even though members of the school board didn't want to admit it, they knew Ruby's mom was right. They made Ruby sit a tough exam to get in, hoping that she would fail. But Ruby wasn't just brave. She was smart, too, and she aced the test. She was excited to go to her new school, but when she and her mom arrived on her first day, they found a crowd of angry people shouting racist slogans at the gate. "I had no idea what was happening. I thought it was Mardi Gras," remembered Ruby. She was just 6 years old. Each day, Ruby went to school with 4 United States Marshals to protect her. The sight of this small girl flanked by her big bodyguards inspired the artist Norman Rockwell to produce a famous painting called "The Problem We All Live With." Ruby grew up to be a brilliant civil rights activist. She even went to the White House to meet President Barack Obama, and together they looked at Rockwell's painting, which hung outside the Oval Office. "We should never look at a person and judge them by the color of their skin," Ruby said. "That's the lesson I learned in first grade."
Samantha Cristoforetti, astronaut. Always remember, if you have to choose between an easy thing and a hard one, the hard one's usually a lot more fun. Born April 26th, 1977, Italy. Once upon a time, there was an engineer who brewed coffee in outer space. Her name was Samantha, and she was also an astronaut. Samantha had studied mechanical engineering and aeronautics at university. After she graduated, she joined a flight school and finished at the top of her class. Samantha became a fighter pilot in the Italian Air Force, but she wanted to fly even higher. So she applied to the European Space Agency to join its space program. Only 6 pilots out of more than 8,000 applicants were selected. Samantha was one of them. For 2 years, she went through an incredibly hard training program. At an underwater military training camp in Houston, Texas, Samantha had to learn how to assemble equipment at the bottom of a pool 4 times deeper than a normal one, how to swim while wearing a spacesuit, and how to fight underwater. She even had to learn how to speak Russian. Once she had mastered all that, she was ready to go. At the International Space Station, Captain Cristoforetti performed over 200 experiments to study how the human body reacts to long stretches of time spent in zero gravity. In the future, she predicted, the human race will live on multiple planets, so it's important to know what happens to our bodies in outer space. During the mission, Samantha also experimented with different kinds of food. "Who would want to live on Mars?" she asked, "if they could only eat stuff squeezed out of a tube." She was the 3rd European woman to travel to outer space, and the 1st person to brew coffee there.
Sappho, poet. I declare that later on, even in an age unlike our own, someone will remember who we are. Circa 610 BCE to circa 570 BCE, Greece. A long time ago, On a small island in the Aegean Sea called Lesbos, there lived a poet. Her name was Sappho. Sappho had dark hair and a sweet smile. She ran a special boarding school where girls were educated in art and religion. She also wrote poems, and these were read and sung during public ceremonies, often as a farewell to the students who were ready to leave the school. Sappho wrote about the intense emotional bond between girls and young women. In ancient Greece at that time, married women weren't able to have the close friendships they had enjoyed at school. Instead, they were mostly confined to their husbands' homes. Sappho's poems celebrated the loving relationships that existed between girls to remind older women of the friendships they had enjoyed in their younger days. The greatest writers and thinkers of the time praised her work, and she inspired many others. She even created a new form of poetry called the Sapphic stanza. She wrote her lines of verse on papyrus scrolls, some of which were carefully stored in the Great Library of Alexandria in Egypt. But over the centuries, most of the fragile scrolls were lost. Although Sappho wrote more than 10,000 lines during her life, only a few fragments of her poems have survived to the present day. Sappho's poetry is so romantic that for thousands of years, she has symbolized women's love around the world. And that is why women who love women are called lesbians, after the beautiful Greek island where Sappho lived.
Sarah Seeger, astrophysicist. Being a scientist is like being an explorer. Born July 21st, 1971, Canada. Once upon a time, there lived a girl whose mind seemed to work much faster than anyone else's. She could make connections between things in the blink of an eye. She didn't watch TV because it seemed slow and boring. She preferred to be up in her bedroom looking through her telescope. While other people looked at the moon or the stars, Sarah looked at the spaces in between. She knew that in the dark spaces, there were billions more stars, and that most of those had planets circling around them, just like the Earth orbits the Sun. Were they far enough from their own suns not to burn up? Were they near enough not to be permanently frozen? Were they in that sweet spot, that one chance in a million where life could form? Sarah Seeger grew up to be a real-life alien hunter. Her job, at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, is to look for signs of life on exoplanets, which are planets beyond our own solar system that orbit stars in distant galaxies. In the hallway outside her office is a poster of one of them, a rocky desert with two suns burning in the sky, just like Luke Skywalker's home planet Tatooine in the Star Wars movies. Sarah is not very practical and admits she couldn't change a light bulb at home. But her two boys are proud of their mom, a certified genius and one of the top astrophysicists in the world. She sometimes can't find their socks, but she might just find a whole new Earth.
Sarinya Srisakul, firefighter. The main thing about being heroic is helping others. Born circa 1980, United States of America. One day, a young woman went to her father with some exciting news. "Dad," she said, "I've signed up to become a firefighter." Her father was stunned. "You're crazy," he said. "It's dangerous. It's not a very good job for a woman. And anyway, we're from Thailand. There aren't any Asian people in New York's fire department." But Sarinya was determined. She went through a tough 3-month boot camp where she learned how to fight kitchen and car fires, how to maneuver aerial ladders, and how to handle lots of other challenges. She was the only woman trainee, and one of the very few who wasn't white. It was extremely hard, but she made it. Firefighters need to be very fit to deal with all sorts of emergencies, so to keep in shape, Serenia began to cycle from home to work and back again. Every day she faced new and unexpected situations, stuck elevators, suspicious packages, flooding, car accidents, gas leaks. "I never knew what to expect when I walked in the fire station door," Serenia explains. "Being a firefighter is really fun and exciting, and you get to help people." Whenever there was a woman who needed help, Serenia was always first on the scene. Sometimes seeing a face like your own gives a huge sense of relief to someone in an emotional state, she says. The fact that she spoke several languages was also a big advantage in New York, where there are so many people from different cultures, and not everyone speaks English. There are now twice as many women in New York's fire department as there were when she started. "That's great," says Serenia. "But I'm still the only Asian woman firefighter. I'm really looking forward to meeting number two."
Selda Bajan, singer and songwriter. Songs are more dangerous than weapons. Born 1948, Turkey. Once there was a girl who spent every night playing and singing with her brothers, pretending to be the Beatles. Her name was Selda. When she grew up, Selda moved to the city of Ankara to study physics. Her brothers had also moved there, and they ran a popular music club called Beethoven. Every night, Selda would put down her books, pick up her electric guitar, and head to Beethoven. The club was always packed whenever Selda played. She put a rock twist on Turkish folk music. Nobody had ever heard anything like it before. Selda's music was political, and her lyrics directly challenged the government. "Why is it so hard to make new roads?" she would sing. When a military regime took power in Turkey, Selda was banned from appearing on TV and arrested 3 times. The government even took away her passport so she couldn't leave the country. But nobody could stop Selda's music. Millions of people all over the world danced to her songs. When she was finally free to travel again, she headed for London, where thousands of fans were waiting for her. Selda started touring and even set up her own record label. When she found out that 2 American rappers had sampled her music without her permission and without paying her, she sued their record company. She didn't win, but she wasn't mad at the artists. She said she was proud that they'd used her song to rap about the Black American activist Malcolm X. "Yes, they cheated me," she said, "but for a good cause."
Serafina Battaglia, anti-mafia witness. Justice is my weapon. 1919 to September 9th, 2004. Italy. Serafina owned a coffee shop. Her husband was a criminal. He belonged to a violent organization called the Mafia. He and his friends would meet at her coffee shop to plot all sorts of crimes. Serafina heard the men plotting, but she never spoke up or tried to stop them. In her twisted world, people who went to the police were despised, while those who robbed and killed were admired. One fateful day, the men in her husband's gang turned against him. They killed him and Serafina's son. Many other women had seen their loved ones killed, but none of them had spoken out. For Serafina, though, this was too much. She realized that her silence had allowed terrible things to happen. Wrapped in a mourning shawl, she went to court to face the men accused of killing her son. There, the most powerful mafia bosses in Italy stood behind bars like animals in a cage. Serafina held the bars and looked the men in the eye. "You drank my son's blood," she said, "and here, before God and man, I spit in your face." And she did. Then she turned to the judge and said, "Mafia bosses have no honor." That was the start of a 10-year collaboration between Serafina and the police. Thanks to her, officers arrested hundreds of criminals. Some of them later bribed the judges and walked free, but even so, Serafina had set an example. After her, many more women started to speak out. "If all the women talked about what they know of their men," she said, "the mafia would no longer exist."
Shamsia Hassani, graffiti artist. The women I paint are not women who stay at home. They are new women, full of energy. Born 1988, Afghanistan. Once upon a time, there was a girl who was an incredibly fast painter. In just a few minutes, she would create a mural and be gone. Her name was Shamsia, and she lived in Kabul, Afghanistan. There was a good reason for Shamsia to be so quick. If she was caught making art in the streets, she would be harassed by people who believed an Afghan woman should be at home, not painting on walls. Afghanistan could be a dangerous place for women, especially those who wanted to change the rules. Shamsia used her art to advance women's rights in her country. "Graffiti is a friendly way to fight," she said. "Most people don't go to art galleries or museums, but if I create my art in the streets, they will see it." Shamsia couldn't paint on big buildings, however, because each mural would take too much time to complete, increasing the risk of getting caught. Instead, she chose staircases, walls of narrow streets, back alleys, hidden passages that people still used on a daily basis. She mainly painted women, big, tall women. She wanted people to notice them and to see them in a new way. When people see something every day, on their way to work or to school, it becomes part of their life, she explained, and that's when they start to change their mind about something. In one of Shamsia's murals, a girl is playing a red electric guitar. In another one, on a cracked wall near a staircase, a tall woman wearing a light blue burqa is looking up toward the sky.
Simone Veil, politician. Europe's destiny and the future of the free world are entirely in our hands. Born July 13, 1927, died June 30, 2017, France. Simone could not understand war. "Why would one country want to attack another?" she asked. She was a Jewish girl, living through the Second World War, one of the most violent conflicts the world had ever seen, and her whole family had been deported by the Nazis to a concentration camp. By the time the war came to an end, Simone had lost her mom, her dad, and her brother. She had witnessed so much injustice that she felt a great urge to do something about it. She studied law and became a judge in France. Simone got married to a man who worked in aeronautics. One day, the French president visited their home to ask her husband if he would like to join the government. By the end of the president's visit, it was Simone who was offered the job. She became the health minister in the president's cabinet. When France and other countries decided to unite their citizens in the European Union, Simone ran to become a member of the European Parliament. She won, and even became its first president. As president, Simone focused on reconciliation, even when that meant working with Germany, whose Nazi regime had once caused so much pain to her people. But she knew war was not, and had never been, an answer. She believed that peace and justice were worth fighting for. Simone thought that was what the European dream was about, and she devoted her life to it. "The idea of war was for me something terrible," Simone Veil once told a journalist. "The only possible option was to make peace."
Sky Brown, skateboarder. "When I'm scared, I feel the most happy, and it's so fun to see the look on all the boys' faces." Born July 7th, 2008, Japan. Once upon a time in Japan, there was a little girl called Sky. Sky's dad was a skateboarder, and she loved watching him zoom up slopes and perform amazing stunts. Although she could barely walk, Sky used to balance on his skateboard and try to copy him. At first, Sky's dad was afraid she'd fall and hurt herself. But then he realized that she was a natural at skateboarding. He bought her a board of her very own. When Sky went to the skate park to practice, the older boys would sometimes cut in front of her. What could this little girl know about skateboarding? Well, she knew quite a bit. Being underestimated pushed Sky to train harder, to jump higher, and to learn more tricks. Soon, she was the youngest skater ever on the Vans Park Series, a professional skateboarding tour. Nobody gets good at skating without suffering their share of bloody knees and scraped elbows, and Sky has tumbled off her board many times. Once, she fell in a steep bowl during a competition. She couldn't climb out on her own, but three of her fellow skaters helped her clamber to the top. They gave her a high five when she made it out. "It's okay to fall," she thought, "when you can count on people to pick you up. I want to be just like them, a good skater and a good person." Today, Sky continues to push the limits and challenge much older competitors in the male-dominated skateboarding world. "I prefer ramps and bowls to swings and slides. They are just so much more fun," she says. "Landing a flip super clean is just so exciting. I love the feeling of it all."
Sophia Ionescu, neurosurgeon. When I performed my first operation, neurosurgery had just started. April 25th, 1920 to March 21st, 2008. Romania. Once there was a girl with wonderful hands, strong and steady with long, elegant fingers. "With hands like those, you could be a pianist or a painter," said her school teachers. Art and music were all very well, but Sophia had something else in mind. A young friend of hers had died following brain surgery. Sophia wanted to become a neurosurgeon to help save the lives of people like her friend. At that time, there were hardly any female doctors in Romania, and female neurosurgeons were extremely rare everywhere in the world. Sophia's teachers didn't think she was smart enough even to get into medical school, but she studied hard by the light of a street lamp shining through her bedroom window, and with her mother's constant support, she passed all her courses and exams and became a doctor. During the Second World War, Sophia volunteered to take care of the wounded soldiers in the hospital near her home. She operated on them, mostly performing amputations when their arms or legs had been so badly damaged they could not be saved. But she still wanted most of all to be a neurosurgeon, operating on the brain. One day she got her chance. A boy was rushed into the hospital with terrible injuries to his head. None of the other surgeons were there. As bombs fell around them, Sophia took up a scalpel and looked at her hands. They were strong and steady as always. That day, she saved the young boy's life. After the war, Sophia trained as a neurosurgeon, and through her long and distinguished career, she saved many, many more lives.
Sojourner Truth, activist. "Look at my arm. Ain't I a woman?" Born circa 1797. Died November 26th, 1883. United States of America. Isabella had a powerful voice, but she couldn't use it because she was born into slavery. When she grew up, Isabella fell in love with a man named Robert and wanted to marry him. But the family who kept him enslaved forbade him from being with her. She was forced to marry another man, Thomas, and they had five children. But Isabella never knew if she would see her children from one day to the next. The slave owners could sell them without even telling her. It was terrifying. The man who held her captive, Dumont, promised he would set Isabella and her children free. But when the day came, he broke his word. Outraged, Isabella escaped. Some neighbors, who wanted slavery to end, paid Dumont $20, and Isabella was finally set free. Now she could use her voice. One of her sons, Peter, had been sold to a slave owner in Alabama. But Isabella knew it was illegal to sell slaves across state lines. She took the white man to court and won. Peter returned with her to New York. Isabella changed her name to Sojourner Truth. Sojourner means one who travels, and she set out across the country, giving speeches about the true meaning of slavery and about the importance of equal rights for men and women. That man over there says that women need to be helped into carriages and lifted over ditches, she said in one speech. Nobody ever helps me into carriages or over mud puddles. And ain't I a woman?
Sonia Sotomayor, Justice of the Supreme Court. The Latina in me is an ember that blazes forever. Born June 25th, 1954, United States of America. Once there was a girl who wanted to be a detective. Her name was Sonia. When she was six, Sonia was diagnosed with diabetes. "You can't be a detective," she was told. "You need to find something else." But Sonia didn't give up. Her favorite TV show was a legal drama starring a brilliant lawyer named Perry Mason. He wasn't as exciting as her favorite detective, Nancy Drew, but he was great at solving crimes. "Fair enough," she thought. "I'll be a lawyer like Perry Mason." Sonia came from a poor family that had moved to New York from Puerto Rico. When she was nine, her father died, leaving her mother to provide for the entire family. She worked 6 days a week, and she kept telling Sonia that she had to get an excellent education. Sonia didn't disappoint her. She studied hard and became one of the few Hispanic female students accepted by Princeton University at that time. "I felt like an alien," she later recalled. But she still managed to graduate with top grades, and she continued her studies at the prestigious Yale Law School. She became a judge and worked at every level of the judicial system. When Barack Obama was elected president, he nominated her to the Supreme Court of the United States, and Sonia became the first Latina to serve in that position. Sonia played a major role in some of the country's most important legal cases, including the historic decision to make same-sex marriage legal in all states.
Sophia Loren, actress. "Everything you see, I owe to spaghetti." Born September 20th, 1934, Italy. Sophia's nickname was Toothpick. She grew up in Naples, Italy, during the Second World War, sharing a small apartment with her mom, her sister, her grandparents, and her aunt and uncle. Nobody ever had enough to eat. Sophia's mom had often dreamt of becoming an actress, so when she heard that extras were needed on a film shoot in Rome, she packed her bags and headed off, taking Sophia with her. Sophia was still a teenager, but she realized that she liked being on set, so she decided to stay in Rome and try to become an actress herself. By this time, the skinny little toothpick had blossomed into a beautiful young woman. Sophia worked as a model for magazines and in fashion shows while she tried to break into the movies. Directors were attracted first by her beauty, but they quickly found out that Sophia was also an incredible actress. Soon enough, she became the face of Italian cinema. Comedies, dramas, thrillers, she starred in them all. With her mischievous sense of humor, her passion, and her strong personality, Sophia embodied the whole country's determination to bounce back after the long, hard years of war and to work toward a brighter future. Hollywood also noticed Sophia's talent, and before long, producers were falling over each other to sign her to their next big film. She put that special sparkle into the golden age of American cinema. "If you're stubborn enough," Sophia once said, "you will know which stories are closer to your heart. You will do your best to tell those stories, and eventually, you'll be successful."
Sophie Scholl, activist. "What does my death matter if through us thousands of people are stirred to action?" May 9th, 1921 to February 22nd, 1943. Germany. Once upon a time, a girl named Sophie used to stand outside her town's prison walls, playing her flute, hoping that one particular prisoner would hear. The tune she played was Die Gedanken sind frei, Your Thoughts Are Free. And the prisoner listening in his cell was her father. He had been thrown in jail because he was opposed to the Nazis and their leader, Adolf Hitler. When she was younger, Sophie had supported Hitler. She and her brother Hans had even marched in parades for him. But then they started reading about the terrible things the Nazis were doing. They learned about the mass murder of Jews and other unwanted people, and they realized their father had been right from the start. Adolf Hitler was not a good man. Sophie and Hans formed a group called the White Rose and produced flyers and pamphlets encouraging Germans to resist the Nazis. At that time, every school, church, university, and street was full of spies, and anyone who dared criticize Hitler was reported to the police and arrested. But that didn't stop Sophie. She knew in her heart that opposing the Nazi Party was the right thing to do, and she wasn't afraid of the consequences. How can we expect justice to prevail if we don't give ourselves up for a just cause? She said. Sadly, Sophie and the other members of the White Rose were arrested, tried, and executed by the Nazis. But their example inspired people all over the world to fight for freedom.
Steffi Graf, tennis player. I started my career in my living room. My dad threw the ball and I hit it. I destroyed a lot of furniture. Born June 14th, 1969, Germany. Once there was a little girl who loved tennis. Steffi would watch her father coaching all the other players and follow him around, pestering him to let her play too. "Papa, I want a racket. I want to play tennis like you." "You're too small," her father would say. "Wait until you have grown up a little more." "But I want to play now." She bugged him so much that finally he gave in. He picked up a tennis racket and chopped the handle in half. "There," he said, "now you can play." Steffi was thrilled. She made her own little tennis court in the basement, tying a piece of string between two chairs for the net. She spent hours downstairs, blissfully banging the ball with her racket. She was very happy. Her mother was not so happy, though. A lot of lamps got broken. When she was just 6 years old, Steffi won her first tennis tournament. And from then on, there was no stopping her. She grew up to be one of the most brilliant tennis stars in the world. She won 22 Grand Slam singles titles, captured an Olympic gold medal, and was voted German Sports Personality of the Year, a record-breaking 5 times. Now she loves spending time with her daughter, Jazz, who prefers roller skating and hip-hop dance to tennis. Steffi doesn't mind. She believes that every little girl should be free to do what she loves and what makes her happy.
Temple Grandin, Professor of Animal Sciences. The most important thing people did for me was to expose me to new things. Born August 29th, 1947, United States of America. Once upon a time, there was a girl who invented a hug machine. Her name was Temple, and she didn't speak until she was 3.5 years old. Luckily, her parents realized she needed a little extra help and hired a speech therapist for her. Temple's mom could see that her daughter was different, but she didn't realize until later that she was autistic. An autistic person's brain is wired slightly differently, and her experience of the world is different from other people's as a result. Like many autistic children, Temple had super-sensitive skin. She found clothes really itchy, so she always had to wear very soft pants and shirts. She also didn't like to be hugged, but she loved the feeling of being pressed. So she invented a machine that could hug her just the way she wanted. At that time, people didn't understand autism. They didn't want to be labeled as autistic, even though that can mean many different things. Autistic children are on a spectrum that can range from genius level to a child with severe developmental disabilities or no language at all. But Temple was not afraid to speak about her autism and to explain the different way her brain worked. "I don't think in words," she liked to say. "I think in pictures, just like a cow." Temple instinctively understood how animals make sense of the world. She became a world-famous professor of animal sciences and argued strongly for the humane treatment of livestock in a brilliant book called Animals Make Us Human.
Troop 6000, Girl Scouts. There is so much more out there that you're capable of accomplishing. Started February 2017, United States of America. Giselle was a single mother with five children. She worked hard to pay the rent on their low-cost apartment. But when the landlord sold the building, she couldn't afford another place, and she and her kids found themselves homeless. The city of New York had rented 10 floors to shelter homeless families at a motel in the Queens neighborhood, and that's where Giselle and her children went. At the time, Giselle was working at the Girl Scouts of Greater New York, so she thought, why not start a troop in the shelter? And she did. At the first meeting, there were only 8 girls, and 3 of them were Giselle's own daughters. But she didn't give up. Through word of mouth and flyers, Troop 6000 grew to 28 members, some as young as 5 years old. "Being homeless is not easy," Giselle said. "I hope the girls in Troop 6000 learn that tough times are just seasons in their lives, and that they will surpass it." Troop 6000 is the first one for homeless girls in New York City. But many more will follow. Unfortunately, homelessness is still a serious problem across America. "We are like a pack," said Giselle's daughter, Karina. "If one of us is down, the rest of us will be there to pick them back up." Like other Girl Scouts and Girl Guides, Karina and her friends love adventure. They cultivate courage and honesty, responsibility and strength. They know that no matter where you're from or where you live, that's what being a Girl Scout is all about.
Valentina Tereshkova, Cosmonaut. "Hey, Sky, take off your hat. I'm on my way." Born March 6, 1937, Russia. Once upon a time, there was an 80-year-old woman who wanted to volunteer for a one-way trip to Mars. Her name was Valentina, and back when she was 24, she was the first woman to travel to outer space. Valentina loved to fly. She would parachute every weekend, during the day or at night, onto land and into water. When Russia started selecting women to train as cosmonauts, Valentina did her best to get into the program. After months of hard training, she was chosen to fly aboard the spacecraft Vostok 6. Soon after takeoff, though, Valentina realized that something was wrong. The settings for re-entry were incorrect, and at the end of the mission, they would have sent the craft shooting off into outer space instead of back to Earth. As much as she loved flying, Valentina wasn't ready to leave Earth for good just yet. So she got in touch with the engineers back at Mission Control, and everyone worked frantically to correct the settings before it was too late. Her bosses were horrified and didn't want to admit they'd made a mistake. They made Valentina promise she'd never tell anyone. 30 years passed before she could reveal the truth about her mission. Now that she's an old woman, Valentina would love to blast off into space on one final voyage. The Earth looks so beautiful and fragile from outer space, she says. We must do our best to protect it, especially from asteroids.
Valerie Thomas, astronomer. Figuring out what you want comes from failing and then trying again. Born May 1943, United States of America. One day, a young girl picked up a book called The Boy's First Book of Radio and Electronics. I'm not a boy, thought Valerie, but who cares? This is really fascinating. When her dad took apart their television to fix it, Valerie wanted to help. This is too complicated for girls, her father said, but she wanted to find out how things worked. After university, she got a top job at NASA, working on something way more complicated than a television, the world's first satellite. Landsat 1 was launched into space, and it sent back images of the Earth that helped predict weather patterns and crop cycles. Then one day, Valerie visited a science museum and saw something that would change her life. It was a light bulb, sitting on its own, with no connections, and shining brightly. How did they do that? The answer was a clever optical illusion created by a hidden second light bulb and concave mirrors that made it look as if the first bulb was on. That gave Valerie a great idea. She began to research concave mirrors and light at NASA, and she came up with a brilliant invention called the illusion transmitter. This amazing piece of technology is still used in NASA's space exploration programs, and scientists like Valerie are developing ways to use it to look inside the human body. One day, it may also project 3D videos from your television right into your living room. Figure out what you want. Fight the power. Live without limits, Valerie says. You won't figure it out if you just play by the rules and listen obediently.
Violeta Parra, composer and musician. Don't cry when the sun is gone, because the tears won't let you see the stars. October 4th, 1917 to February 5th, 1967. Chile. Once upon a time, there was a girl who used to sing with her sister while cleaning gravestones at the cemetery. Her name was Violeta. Violeta didn't have beautiful dresses to wear. Her family was poor, so her mother made her dresses from scraps of material. Violeta didn't mind. In fact, she thought her clothes were so beautiful that even when she was grown up and had money of her own, she decided to keep dressing that way. One day, she and her sister passed a farm and heard some workers singing a beautiful song. "I love that song so much," Violeta exclaimed. So when she got home, she found her father's guitar and began to play. Her fingers danced across the strings, making the most enchanting music. When she got older, Violeta started to travel across Chile. With a recorder and a notebook in hand, she went to the remotest corners of the country, gathering songs and memories from all the people she met. Many of the songs she learned had been passed from generation to generation, but no one had ever written them down or recorded them before Violeta came along. Her music was deeply inspired by the traditional folk culture she had absorbed during her journey. Violeta became a national hero. Her songs spoke of legends, history, love, and life. Violeta was also a sculptor, a poet, and a painter, and she embroidered pictures that were so beautiful they were exhibited at the Louvre Museum in Paris after her death. Today, Violeta's songs are sung all over the world.
Virginia Hall, spy. After all, my neck is my own. If I am willing to get a crick in it, I think that's my choice. Born April 6th, 1906, died July 8th, 1982, United States of America. Once upon a time, there was a woman with a wooden leg. Her name was Virginia, and she called her leg Cuthbert. Though she walked with a limp, Virginia was amazingly determined. When the Second World War broke out, she joined the British Special Forces and set off across the English Channel to help the French resistance fight the Nazis. Virginia was a master of disguise. One time, she pretended to be an elderly milkmaid. She dyed her hair gray, put on a long skirt, and shuffled along so no one could see she had a limp. She managed to send out secret radio messages telling the Allies about German troop movements. It was incredibly dangerous, and Virginia knew that if she were discovered, she would be tortured and killed. But she carried on regardless. The Limping Lady, as she was known, was considered the most dangerous of all Allied spies. The Nazi secret police put up wanted posters all over France, but Virginia always stayed one step ahead of them. Once, she almost died crossing the Pyrenees Mountains on foot in the middle of winter. She radioed a message to London. "Having trouble with Cuthbert." They didn't realize she was talking about her leg. "If Cuthbert is giving you difficulty," they replied, "have him eliminated." By the end of the war, the Limping Lady's team had destroyed 4 bridges, derailed several freight trains, blown up a railway line, cut down telephone wires, and captured hundreds of enemy soldiers. Virginia was declared America's greatest female spy and received a medal for her bravery.
Vivian Mayer, photographer. I'm sort of a spy. February 1st, 1926 to April 21st, 2009. United States of America. Once there was a nanny who was a secret photographer. She would walk the streets of Chicago with the children she was looking after and photograph strangers going about their daily lives. Her name was Vivian. She never showed her pictures to anyone. Vivian lived for 40 years with the families she worked for. She didn't like to talk and asked for locks for her room, which she forbade anyone to enter. She was so secretive that when she took her film roles to be developed, she never gave her real name. Over the course of her life, she took more than 100,000 pictures, but nobody ever knew she was a photographer. Vivian kept all her negatives and prints in a rented storage space. 2 years before she died, she failed to pay the rent, and everything inside was put up for sale. At the auction, all of her work was bought by 3 photo collectors. They had no idea they had found a treasure trove. Despite having no formal training, Vivian had captured the street life of post-war America with the rawness and intensity of a master. People eating donuts, shopping for groceries, going to museums, being arrested, kissing, selling newspapers, cleaning shoes. Sometimes she also took pictures of herself, as seen in the reflection of shop windows, or even as a shadow on a wall. She became a worldwide sensation. She used a Rolleiflex camera, held at chest level so she could maintain eye contact with the person she was photographing. Many of her most memorable shots are of people staring straight at her.
Wisława Szymborska, poet. In every possible answer, there should be another question. July 2nd, 1923 to February 1st, 2012, Poland. Once, many years ago, a little girl handed a piece of paper to her father. On it was a poem she had written. Her father put on his glasses and studied the wobbly handwriting very seriously. Then he nodded, reached into his pocket, and pulled out a penny. "It is a good poem, Wisława," he said, giving the coin to his daughter with a smile. Wisława's house was full of books. She read everything she could and wrote poetry throughout her childhood. Although her family wasn't rich, it was a happy house, full of chatter and laughter and books and cats. Everything changed when the Second World War broke out. Led by Hitler, the German army invaded Wisława's homeland of Poland when she was 16. It was a terrible time for Jewish people like her. She still wrote poetry, but it had to be in secret. If the Nazis had found her poems, especially one that poked fun at Hitler as a baby, calling him a little fellow in his itty-bitty robe, she would have been killed. Over the course of the war, millions of European Jews were taken to concentration camps and murdered, but Wisława miraculously managed to survive, and to keep writing. People everywhere loved her poetry because she wrote simply and beautifully about all sorts of ordinary things. Chairs and sorrows, scissors, tenderness, transistors, violins, and teacups. She also found fun and laughter in unexpected places. When she won a Nobel Prize in literature, she joked that it was all because her friend had a magic sofa. If you sat in it, you would get the prize.
Yeonmi Park, activist. I felt only the stars were with us. Born October 4th, 1993, North Korea. Once upon a time, in North Korea, people were not free to sing, to wear what they wanted, to read a newspaper, or to make a phone call abroad. Yeonmi was born there. Like many North Koreans, she was so scared of the supreme leader that she thought he could read her mind and would imprison her if he didn't like her thoughts. When Yeonmi was 14, her family decided to escape. It was a dangerous journey. She and her mother crossed a frozen river and three mountains to get to the Chinese border. There, they were treated very badly. When refugees have no option but to enter a country illegally, they have no laws to protect them and can fall victim to all sorts of criminals. Yeonmi and her mother lived in hiding, terrified that the Chinese authorities would find them and send them back to North Korea. It was so scary that they fled again to Mongolia. They walked across the Gobi Desert using a compass. When it stopped working, they followed the stars. At the Mongolian border, the guards told them they couldn't cross. Having lost all hope, Yeonmi and her mother threatened to kill themselves. The guards let them pass. A few years later, Yeonmi, now living safely in New York City, told her story in a powerful speech at the One Young World Summit in Ireland. Her words moved the world and she became a full-time activist for human rights. Every day, she works to liberate her birth country from its terrible dictatorship and to protect North Korean refugees.
Acknowledgements. Our biggest, most heartfelt, loudest thank you goes to our rebel community on Kickstarter. All of you, once again, responded with such generosity and enthusiasm to Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls 2. Not only did you back this campaign, but you helped us find these incredible stories, you cheered for us along the way, and above all, you kept believing in us.
A special thank you also goes to all the boys and men who are reading these stories and are brave enough to fight this battle alongside the women in their life.
Thank you, dads, who are raising free, independent, strong daughters.
To our own dads, Angelo and Uccio, thank you for always supporting us. Even when we challenged you, even when you didn't understand our choices, you were always on our side. Thank you for instilling in us a burning desire for discovery and adventure, and a deep love for the places we come from.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Rebel Team. Shantae, Brianna, Emilio, Maria, McCall, Michonne, Eleonora, Cleo, Julia, it is an honor to work with you every day.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls 2 by Elena Favilli and Francesca Cavallo. Read by a full cast. This program was directed by Paul Rubin, Scott Sherritt, Kim Smith, Elizabeth Healy, and Juliana Wilson. Producer, Juliana Wilson. Text copyright 2017 by Timbuktu Labs. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.